Hello, and welcome to the Live Printing Impressions Magazine webinar, Critical Communications with Your Clients, High-Speed Digital Printing, Maximizing the Communication Channel, and Delivering Total Value, which is sponsored by Ricoh. I'm Mark Michelson, Editor-in-Chief of Printing Impressions, and the host of today's event. High-speed digital print production of content-critical documents is a key element in the overall value chain of what some printers provide their clientele. But just as important as the output of versioned, individualized printed pieces themselves are how well print service providers manage and protect customers' data and how they create best-in-class online customer interfaces and alternative electronic delivery formats. This webinar will concentrate on the keys to operating a successful high-speed inkjet digital production printing operation, but also explore what's required to build a total solutions offering. Key areas of focus for today's speakers will include continuous feed inkjet print production of error-free personalized documents, maintaining data integrity and developing key process controls, and developing a total solutions package including print and electronic delivery, data analytics, application development, customer portals, reporting services, and mailing and fulfillment. Before we get started, let me point out a few quick tips on how to make the most of today's live webinar. First, if you have any technical difficulties, troubleshoot by clicking on the help widget at the bottom of the console marked with a question mark, or let us know via the Q&A box. You can also use the Q&A box to submit your questions to today's panelists. We'll be addressing select questions during and at the end of the webinar, so you can send them in at any time. Please make sure you turn off your pop-up blockers on your computer so that you can utilize all the widgets and bells and whistles on this console. Speaking of bells and whistles, please click on the Tips for Attendees widget below to learn what all of the widgets on this console can do and how you can customize your experiences today. Here today to provide real-life examples, insight and examples, are today's featured speakers. Our panel includes Jim Ranella, Vice President and General Manager of Diamond Marketing Solutions. He is joined by Mitch Anderson, Vice President of Sales at Pinnacle Data Solutions. Each will start out by presenting a general overview of their operations, which will be followed by a group discussion led by me. So, Jim, why don't you start out by telling us a little bit about your operation?
Okay, Mark, thanks for having me. Diamond Marketing Solutions is a data-driven company. We use data in all different parts of our organization. We look at target markets relevant to for dynamic communications. We achieve using print and online direct response media, whether it's printed or it's digital delivery for e-delivery. Our in-house solutions include this. The three vertical markets that we have today that we serve are the critical communications market, or otherwise known as the transactional market, the direct response market, which is our direct marketing or direct mail market, and then we also have a facilities that have critical fulfillment or fulfillment typically of collateral, but we also do some critical fulfillment where we have some gift cards and different types of critical items that you would have. Diamond Marketing is a national company. We have 7 locations. We have 3 locations in the Chicagoland area. We have St. Charles, Illinois, Bloomingdale, Illinois, as well as Waukegan. We have a plant in Council Bluffs, Iowa. And we have 3 facilities on the West Coast, San Diego, California, Renton, Washington, and Kent, Washington. Out of those facilities, two are strictly direct mail or direct response facilities. We have 3 facilities that are transactional facilities. We mail neighborhood of 520 million packages a year. And the markets that we and the industries that we serve, what this slide shows, financial is a big market for our transactional, as well as healthcare, patient billing, transactional documents such as checks for financial market, and then if we have a vertical market offer, that would be credit unions, and then our direct mail, direct response, look for acquisition type of mailings, if you will. So, Mark, that's kind of encompasses what we are at Diamond Marketing Solutions.
Okay, great, Jim. As mentioned, we also have Mitch Anderson with us. Mitch, what can you tell us about Pinnacle Data Systems?
Sure. Thank you very much for having me, Mark. Pinnacle Data Solutions is 100% a business-critical document communications company, and as Jim said, another term for that is transactional mail. Today, we're printing about 750 million pages, mailing close to 300 million envelopes, and hosting about 300 million web documents annually. We have three redundant production facilities, one in Atlanta, Georgia, one in Birmingham, Alabama, and one in Phoenix, Arizona. Since 2006, we've increased revenue over 1,500%. We've had an incredible amount of growth, and a lot of that growth, especially since 2010, has been directly generated by our commitment to full-color inkjet printing. Color has been very, very influential in our growth since 2010, and at least 75% of the new deals that we do today are in full color.
Okay, interesting. Thanks, Mitch. Now with the webinar, what I'd like to do is move into more of a Q&A format with me asking our two panelists some questions. But I encourage the audience to submit your questions as we go along. We will have a Q&A session at the very end of the webinar, but I also will try to interject some pertinent questions that come in as we do our discussion. So please don't hesitate to submit your questions as you think of them. So let's get right to it. Jim and Mitch, one of the areas that we've seen in a lot of news reports in the general media is about security hacking at several of the major retailers. So is data security something that your clients worry about more and more today than they have in the past? Is that something you find, Mitch?
Yeah, it certainly is. These type things are covered really in depth by the media. No company wants to have their name out there for that. So it's very, very important to all of our customers. We have a very stringent audit process ourselves, and then we are audited by at least 50% of our customers themselves. So very, very important in today's world.
Now, when you say audit by your customers, I'm just curious, what does something like that entail?
Well, let's take a bank, for instance. They're going to have a security auditing team who they will send out to critical vendors. They'll come in and run our facilities and our systems through their process in order to themselves evaluate how our security is.
Mm-hmm. Now, Jim, your company is involved in more verticals. Is the security hacking issue and data security, is that something that's key within all those verticals as well?
Yes, it would be. You'd be surprised that even on the direct response side, we go through the same rigorous audits that Mitch had just talked about. And ours are done either on a semi-annually or an annually basis. They come in and look at our controls. They come in and look at our tests. And what happens is, even though we're accredited or we have SOC 2 or PCI, that helps within the audit process. But they, like Mitch had just talked about, they come in and they test the controls that we have in place.
Mm-hmm. You talk about the various audits. I assume that having that accreditation is almost a given in terms of what your clients expect. Would that be true, Mitch?
I'm sorry, say the question again. I didn't hear you.
I'm sorry. I said that, having the various yearly audits, is that having those types of accreditation almost a given in terms of what your clients expect from you as a service provider?
In order to operate in the actual mail industry today, you must at minimum do SSAE 16 SOC 2 compliance, which consists of having an auditing firm come in and audit your processes and procedures. We're also PCI compliant. If you're going to have anything to do with payments, PCI is certainly a must as well.
All right. You know, Jim, are there any other ways aside from the audits that you're making the customers feel more at ease about their security of their data?
You also have the physicality of your building, your background checks of your employees. They also audit that through that whole process, not just your controls. So it's a total solution to them when they come in your building and they're looking for cameras and, you know, how often you audit, how often you archive your data, who looks at the cameras, what do you use the cameras for. So it's data, it's physicality, it's employees, it's all of the above when they look at if you're a viable provider of their data, using your data.
Mm-hmm. Jim, a follow-up with that. The data that you're actually receiving from customers, do you find that that's cleaner today than what it used to be, or is that still an issue?
Well, Mark, we receive data in a lot of different shapes and forms. We'll receive data that's raw data, I'm going to call it, flat text files or raw data where we're parsing data out. We receive data where it's print image files, PCL files, PostScript files, PDF files. So our workflow that we've built has to accommodate all of those above, and each one of them has its own intricacies on being able to do that. So we've been able to create a workflow based upon that assortment of a variety of files to bring them through to be able to make it work and then make it work through our color device as well. So that's another hurdle or challenge that we've been able to create in our workflow.
Mm-hmm.
So to answer your question, I think it's got a little bit more, it's got more complicated from what the input has been. A lot of firms like ours don't accept print image files from that simple fact because they're very difficult to deal with. But we've been able to, it's one of our value adds that we can bring, that we bring to the market, that we're able to take a print image file and be able to print it.
Mm-hmm. You know, Mitch, you serve in the capacity as VP of Sales at Pinnacle. So aside from data, what do you think are some of the other keys to retaining your existing customer base?
Well, obviously, we're basically in the service industry. There are a lot of competitors in our industry, and service is certainly the one thing that every customer requires. So we try to provide extremely good service. Continuing to invest in new technology has been very, very important to us, as I spoke about earlier, with the full color. I really can't state enough how important that is in our industry. And we'll speak a little more about e-adoption and that sort of thing. And, mm-hmm. and as that increases, really the printed documents that you send out have to be more and more targeted, more personalized. And in order to do all that requires a lot of investment in both printing equipment and data processing equipment as well.
Mm-hmm. You know, Jim, one of the key areas also in terms of maintaining clients is providing them ROI metrics. Is that something that you find as critical in terms of what your clients are demanding?
They are. And what we do is with our clients, we have a quarterly review of our business with them. And what we do is basically when we go in and bring a client on board, we're going in, and the value proposition is, how do I help you grow your business from a standpoint? How do I help with your fixed cost and make that a variable cost? Some cases we're taking clients in-house operations, and we're taking it out and bringing it in-house to our facilities. So one of the ROIs that we look at, or a couple of ROIs that we're looking at, is how do we help them collect their cash quicker? In other words, how do we redesign a document so they can measure the DSOs on their business for their receivables? Second one is, how do we help you with your cost center calls? Because if you don't have a lot of calls on if the design is correct and it's readable and it's accurate and it's understandable, then we can measure how many call center calls that are going into the call center and see how they're decreasing based upon a design or based upon some document that points to what the person is paying for or what the document's describing.
Right. And Mitch, how are you promoting and selling the value? You know, you say that your company is really built around service. How do you promote and kind of sell the value of that service?
Well, we have a direct sales staff that certainly constantly out looking for new work. We have several strategic channel marketing alliances where we work with some software companies and those type things to provide added services to them. And quite frankly, we use our current customers who are can speak better to our services than anyone else. So
right.
We have some really good customers who really help us from a references standpoint and kind of reinforce the stuff that we're out there telling the market that we're able to do.
Mm-hmm. So there's really no better form of advertising than a testimonial from a satisfied client.
Nothing better.
Yeah.
Especially someone if you're working in the utility vertical market, and the person that you're speaking with, if you can have their peer at another company that you're doing business with speak to them, that is about as good as you can get.
Right. I guess in terms of promoting the value or proving the value of what you guys offer, it's really offering kind of a total solutions approach to, supplement the production of the actual documents. Jim, what is entailed in kind of your company's total solutions approach?
Well, I talked about it a little bit earlier. What we do is we go into a client and we look at postage. We look at their paying for postage. We look at are they putting these dockets simplex or duplex? Because we can eliminate pages. How much white spaces are left on the document when we're talking about the document itself? Then we look at the standpoint. How much they're paying for postage? Are they paying? Is this an in-house? If this is an in-house print shop, are they paying full rate postage where we can save them money on commingling or pre-sorting the documents? So what we're looking at is when we're looking at total solution, Mark, we're looking at everything around the envelope and piece of paper when it comes down to the value added, if you will, from that standpoint. Because this document, somebody's expecting this document in the mail. It's a data-sensitive document, and this needs to get in the mail and a sense of urgency to get in the mail. So, and when it does get in the mail, they're going to want some type of response back from the mail. So we also look at the fact that we've built a system where around the document we have our own. We have something called Diamond View, and it's our mail tracking device that we get feeds from the post office, so we can track the document throughout the postal system. So everything around the envelope is our total selling solutions or our consultative selling.
Mm-hmm. Mitch, one of the questions that came in from one of our listeners, he was curious to know, whose title within your organization is the most appropriate decision maker to talk about the total solutions offerings, or are you using more of a team approach?
Within our organization, that would be myself, Vice President of Business Development. In organizations that we market to, it's typically a director of customer care within some companies, directors of IT within others. It really just depends upon that particular company.
Mm-hmm. Is that pretty much the same for you guys as well, Jim?
Yeah, I would agree. I would agree with what their approach is mirrors what our approach is, Mark. It's the same. It's mm-hmm. the same type of approach. We have an executive vice president of sales, and then underneath there, strategic. Alliances and different, and then we have other salespeople that have expertise in different vertical markets.
Okay. Obviously, it's not all just about producing printed documents more and more, especially in the verticals that you guys are involved in. It's e-delivery of customer data. Are you seeing a higher shift over to e-delivery of data versus items going through the mail stream? Mitch, you want to take that one?
Yes, and certainly seeing that, especially within the financial services world. Typically what we're seeing, if you're sending out a statement, there are some financial services companies that we've worked with that are close to 100% sending out electronic documents relative to statements and those type things, things that are not facilitating a payment back in. Within the billing world, we're probably anywhere from 10 to 20% would be average for our customers. Although every time the postage goes up, without fail, every customer we have wants to come up with a new push for e-delivery.
Right. So with this new postal increase going into effect, you're probably going to see more pressure on that front as well.
We're already seeing it.
Yes. Jim, would that kind of be the same?
On our financial clients and our vertical market, such as the credit unions, we do see that. But on our patient billing and our healthcare, and the demographics don't really lend itself to that, we're not seeing that. We're not seeing that. And so I would agree with what Mitch's synopsis is, that we are seeing that. Postage is pushing more people to go to e-delivery.
So Jim, with that e-delivery, obviously that does affect the workflow on your print production operations. How does that kind of affect your internal operations if you're seeing more things go in the electronic delivery area?
Well, what we're seeing is more, as our business is growing, we're seeing more and more clients who want a paper statement in the mail. We're seeing more of that SLA, that service level agreement, being same day versus the typical next day. So we're seeing more capacity in that regards. So we've been able to fill that capacity of those types of requests by clients. But the mix really, isn't really a large on our end. We have more patient billing than we have financial in our mix for our critical or our transactional mail. So we're not seeing the same adoption as Mitch is because he's running a transactional market that we don't play in. He just talked about utility bills, right, Mitch?
Correct.
So we don't see that. We're seeing more. We're running more healthcare, more healthcare billing than we are financial. On the financial side for our credit union clients, yeah, we're seeing a high adoption rate for that.
Is really postal savings the primary driver of the shift to e-delivery, or are there other factors that come into play? Do you want to address that one, Mitch?
Sure. Certainly postal savings are a big part of it. However, electronic adoption is heavily influenced by generation. The younger generation is much more apt to adopt. And we're also seeing geography play a part in that. Companies on the West Coast appear to have a much better adoption rate for electronic services than companies on the East Coast. And perhaps that says something about, culture from coast to coast. But we really see money and age as the and location as the main drivers for adoption.
All right. Jim, do you see those same trends in the markets that you guys serve?
Yeah, we do see the demographics of age, and when we're talking about, again, everything leans to our healthcare business. We don't see a lot of people asking for their bill to be from an e-delivery, but from a vertical market standpoint of credit unions and community banks, we are seeing that. And those trends that Mitch has just talked about, yeah, I would say the West Coast would be a higher adoption.
How about with the growth of mobile communications in our society? How is that having any impact on your businesses? Jim, you want to?
We're just starting.
Address that?
To, you know, yeah, in the I would say in the last 7 or 8 months, we're just starting to see that on our financial side, where that's been coming. Clients have been asking for it to be on the mobile side, and we've been in a process of looking at that closer. Yeah.
So it's really a matter of making the documents look mobile friendly, so if they access them, that they can see what they're trying to, you know, seeing the document the way it should look.
That's correct.
Mitch, do you see the same trends in your area?
I would agree with what Jim said. We're certainly beginning to see that. Obviously, mobile devices become more and more complex and able to handle a lot of different things. You're only going to see that continue to grow.
Mm-hmm. You know, one of the other areas that I, you know, jumping around a little bit, but, you know, in looking at your guys' websites prior to the prior to this webinar, I saw that, you know, there's web portals that you've created for customers in terms of being able to, you know, access their information and make changes. And Jim, you want to talk a little bit about what you're doing on that front and what kind of value it provides the customer so they can do things kind of through the Internet without having to maybe deal with a live person within your company?
Sure. We have that process, so that web portal it's called Diamond View, and Diamond View allows us to track. It'll allow a client to look at their mail being tracked. What we do is we pre-sort the mail and put a unique serial number in the IBM on the IMB, and we're able to track their mail from start to finish. We also have a client in that same web portal. A client could look at inventory levels if they wanted to look at how many inserts they had left or what have you, or envelopes they've been supplied by. They can also look at that shop floor data collection. They can actually look as the job went through the plant. They have visibility of their job. They also have the ability to, which is a nice feature, is sign-off approval, so we can process the job, create PDFs, post the PDFs up on our web portal, and the client can make notations on it, what they want changed or what they don't want changed. Either they okay it, or they ask for another proof of for sign-off approval. So that's a nice feature, because the client, we can just send PDFs. They can look at it. We can have different levels of approval as well on there. So those are the kind of the features in our Diamond View web portal. We also have, for our fulfillment from a web portal standpoint, we have it where a client can go in, look at all their inventory, and they can do print on demand as well as they can pull inventory for collateral and create kits online and send that information to the facility, and the facility then builds that kit based upon what they have built required.
Mm-hmm. Were those portals, were those customized developments that you guys created, or is there off-the-shelf software that, or to me it sounds like it was probably took some customization?
The whole thing was customization.
Right.
All of it was customization. So it was based upon a team effort to what again they evaluated around the envelope and piece of paper and what we wanted to deliver to the client. And we recognize these needs out there that the client would want to know, especially in a critical mail space. They want to know where their mail is, when it left, and when is anticipated there's going to be home delivery. And so we were able to do that with them going right to their computer or their laptop. They can log on to their account. They can look at the job. They can see how the mail is tracking to the mail system versus calling up a customer service rep or a project manager. You know. So they can actually see that, see inventory level. So all this was driven out of the fact of that value-added solution selling.
Right. How about you, Mitch? You guys have similar customer interfaces?
We're doing the exact same thing with a again, as Jim said, a custom created portal, doing the same thing that Jim just described.
Okay. All right. Let's move the discussion more into the high speed inkjet digital printing side of your businesses. Jim, could you just maybe just start out by just describing a little bit what your digital printing footprint is, in terms of high-speed presses. I know you have multiple plants, so I assume it's set up in more of a redundancy factor, but maybe you could talk a little bit about, just highlighting some of the devices you have and what your infrastructure is there.
Sure. Three years ago, we made a decision to go to white paper. So today we're producing about 95% of print that we produce is on white paper. Either it's going to be done on one of our C900 Ricoh color digital laser presses, or it's going to be done on our Ricoh IP5000 digital inkjet presses. We have two in our St. Charles plant, Illinois, and we have one in our Renton, Washington plant. So the footprints for the C900 are pretty small footprints, and those printers are done a really nice job for us. The high speed IP5000s, that footprint we run roll to roll. That footprint's about 54 feet long, so we have two of them side by side that run three shifts, 7 days, 6 days a week.
Mm-hmm. I'm sorry. Go ahead.
No, I was just gonna add that. On those devices, they run either 420 feet a minute, 210, or 105, depending on the DPI that you're going to print it.
Mm-hmm. Mitch, could you just kind of give a brief overview of your digital printing footprint?
It's actually the same as what Jim just described, except we're doing everything at 600 by 600 DPI, so we're probably printing just a little bit slower on some things.
Okay. One of the questions that came in from our listeners is they were curious as to whether either of your firms transitioned from cut sheet digital to continuous color, and if so, what kind of challenges and opportunities did that present?
Well, really, from our side, Mark, we transitioned more from color pre-printed forms to continuous form inkjet color.
Right.
The biggest thing that we found was color matching. There was a bit of a learning curve there. Our vendor was very, very helpful in getting with us and helping us with that. Ricoh's been very responsive. Overall, it was a little bit of a challenge, but not that much.
Mm-hmm. Jim, anything to comment on that?
Yeah, we transitioned from 2092C Xerox highlight color printers, black and highlight color, and we also had pre-printed stock that we put through the printer. During that transition, we eliminated 206 different pre-printed forms and made them digital overlays, if you will, with that, and then populating the data as it went through the data stream. So our challenge was going and fingerprinting every one of those colors, those PMS colors, because the PMS colors in inkjet don't look like a PMS book that you print on litho. So we also had a large help from Ricoh in helping with us through that transition, which was a really big help.
Good. You mentioned the shift from pre-printed forms, Mitch. What are some of the benefits that you found from getting away from that and embracing high-speed digital production printing in lieu of that?
Well, from our customer standpoint, the biggest thing has been that there's, should they need to make a change to what used to be a pre-printed form, now they don't have to throw away, 2 months' worth of stock or that sort of stuff. They don't have to wait for a commercial printer to print that and get it over. It's something that can be done, within a matter of minutes. And from our perspective internally, it's really helped us create a much more efficient shop floor. I think Jim mentioned earlier about being able to commingle some things on the front end so that you're able to create longer runs and help us drive, you know, help us drive the cost out of our operation as well.
Mm-hmm. Jim, any thoughts on shifting from pre-printed forms to high speed?
Well, it gave us a lot. Digital. It gave us a lot more room in the warehouse, if you will.
Right.
We eliminated a lot of cut sheet, a lot of skids, and a lot of boxes. But what it gave us was the opportunity for to make the pre-printed form that was once a static form to give it some variability as well, and add some one-to-one marketing for the client on that same digital master. So, mm-hmm. Yeah, it's given us a lot more flexibility. And as Mitch had just said, you know, we eliminated the obsolescence factor of forms.
Okay. Mitch, I think you said the DPI resolution was 600 by 600. Is that correct?
That is correct.
We
can print some graphics at an even higher 720 or even higher in some graphics, but most of our stuff is 600 by 600.
And do you find that your customers find that quality output is sufficient, and that's a kind of a non-issue?
That's a non-issue with the equipment that we use. The IP5000 that Jim mentioned earlier is a very good machine. Quality is outstanding.
Mm-hmm. How about you, Jim? What type of a DPI are you using? Similar resolutions?
No, we're running 420 feet a minute. So we're running at their 360 by 360, but it's not a typical inkjet type of device. It's not dot for dot for all CMYK. All the dots are the same size. It's a duple drop dot, easy to say, but it's a dynamic dropping system. It looks at an image. The system looks at an image and creates the image based upon the best way to utilize the ink from an economy standpoint. And so it's you look at an image at 360 by 360 and you really couldn't tell it was 360 by 360.
Mm-hmm.
It does screens, lines, phantoms, halftones very well.
Right. Mitch, are you using any quality control devices on your high-speed inkjet presses, you know, such as like a camera inspection systems or?
No, we do not. We haven't had the need for that yet.
Okay. Do you see that something maybe down the road that would be a necessity or not really at this point?
At the moment, we just haven't had a need for it. The quality has been very consistent. Really haven't had a call for it yet.
Mm-hmm. How about you, Jim? Are you guys using any inspection systems like that?
No, we're not, Mark. We looked into it before we installed our equipment, and what we did was we found that the IP5000 had a lot of internal quality processes that allowed the machine to detect if there was issues with the machine. It actually places four different colored barcodes, reads the barcode to make sure everything's functioning correct. And we also utilize their preventive maintenance every shift. We take 20 minutes and we blow out the inkjet heads on every shift and do a uniformity to make sure that all the heads are firing and it's printing all the way across. And then during a job process, we actually slow the machine down for every 15 minutes to look at and we're able to look at what the ink coverage is to make sure that we're performing and there's no heads that are out. So that's the process that we went with.
Now, Jim, is it, you know, having multiple print engines, how do you manage the color to ensure the consistency across the different devices? Is that
well, like
is that
I, like issue? I, no, it's not an issue because what we did was, like I said, we actually took those pre-printed forms. They were Quirk or InDesign files. We took those files. We locked the color. We created another whole PMS book based upon an inkjet type of inkjet CMYK, and we were able to lock the colors in for those colors. And then what we did is we made sure that on each piece of equipment we printed the same. So we were able to lock the colors in based upon the color overlay I talked about, that digital overlay. So
right.
at the printer level, the operator is not Unlike a pressman, the printer is the print operator is not has doesn't have any control of color. So the color is being done in the workflow before it even gets to the printer.
Mm-hmm. Mitch, how about you in terms of across different engines in terms
yeah,
of
we're doing the same. We prefer to have all that taken care of before it gets to the shop floor so that an operator does not have to change anything. Again, those type things would certainly slow us down and really affect our efficiency, which is going into the full-color inkjet was one of our bigger reasons was for shop floor efficiency.
Right. We were talking about the printing on the shelves, and one of the questions that came in from one of the listeners is, how is the pricing in comparison to the shell printing and personalization with high-speed inkjet pricing? So when you shifted from the pre-printed rolls to the inkjet, did that affect your pricing model? Mitch, do you have any thoughts on that?
It did not affect ours. Any increase that we may have had in a material cost, we have made up for in an efficiency savings in our process, in our shop process.
Mm-hmm. How about you, Jim?
Same here. We didn't have any increase in any type of increase in cost. But it did give us a huge economies of scale because we were able to bring in multiple jobs together into one work order and create one print file and be able to print all those on one roll and then take that roll into an inserter versus taking 100 jobs to 100, running 100 different jobs. So that's where the economies of scale come from.
Mm-hmm. Okay. You know, obviously, when we talk about high-speed inkjet printing, it's everybody gets focused on the engine, but there's you know, obviously much more entailed with that. And I know at our recent at our inkjet summit that we hosted last year, that was one of the key points that came out of that was, you know, it's the pre and the post press are really just as important as the press itself. So, Jim, how are you guys handling the complete production workflow, including the pre- and post-press processes?
So we're running roll to roll. We're taking 50-inch rolls of paper on the front end of the digital inkjet press, and we're running through the two print towers and coming out with another roll on the back end, and then taking that roll to a roll-in inserter. And then inserting in a roll-in inserter and chopping it there. One of the things that we found through our due diligence looking at high-speed digital inkjet was the less movement on the back end, the better off you would be, if you will. So anything that would put on the back end a cutter or you know a booklet maker, all that can impact your production or your high level your production on the print side. So we went with roll to roll.
Right. So really an inline finishing solution just didn't make sense for you guys at this stage of the game.
Correct. Go on.
Okay. Mitch, how are you guys handling the pre- and the post-press side of the digital press equation?
We're roll to cut sheet, and that's really more of a historical issue for us. We were cut sheet on our inserters before that and have just not had the financial investment involved hadn't been there yet to change over our inserters.
Okay. Let's segue a little bit and talk about the consumable sides. Jim, do you guys have any issues with finding the right inkjet paper stocks and inks?
No, Mark. We're running Ricoh's Dye Plus ink right now is the ink that we're running. We ran their dye ink and then we moved to their upgraded Dye Plus ink in the last 12 months. Paper wise, we're running an uncoated digital offset sheet of paper and. It's just, it's a, That piece of paper is a highly calendared piece of paper, so inkjet sits on it very well and creates a nice image. So we're not running any coded stock through our digital inkjet process at this point, but it's all uncoded stock.
Mm-hmm. How about you guys, Mitch?
We're doing the exact same thing.
Okay. So there really is not a cost is less of a factor, and at least in the uncoated market, in terms of the grades are available to you from the mills, and there seems to be more options than there were before.
Yeah, and our vendor has done a nice job of testing those grades and letting mm-hmm. us know about the grades and keeping us informed as mills start to become more familiar with the inkjet market.
Right. What about the ink side of the business in terms of dye versus pigment-based inks? Mitch, do you want to comment on that?
We've had no issues with inks at all. We're running the same thing that Jim mentioned earlier, the dye-based.
Mm-hmm. Jim, maybe you can answer this question that came in from one of the readers or listeners. He wanted to know, what tools do you use to estimate inkjet costs for new work?
Because ours are, when we went and looked at all those 206 different preprints, we brought them to our vendor and said, you know what, what's our ink saturation here? Because we're using black and highlight color, and the color that we're using on a basically it was a letterhead that we were populating a form on it with highlight Xerox printers, and it was basically we were printing 5% black and 3% color, and that was a basic document on the transactional side they were printing. Some had screens, some had full screens, 10% screens, but basically our basic was 5%, 3%. Now when you start to look at color, and you start to talk about saturation of color, then we start to look at more of a direct response type of document. So Ricoh has, they have estimators. They have pieces software that you can use to do that. We don't have that because of the nature of the document that we're doing, but Ricoh has that type of software to be provided to a user.
Mm-hmm. Mitch, you know, I think in your very opening slide, you talked about the strong shift to color with the personalized documents that you're producing for customers. Can you add a little more to that in terms of growth rates? What do you think the big drivers are?
Well, I think the big drivers are is people are trying to get more value out of their transactional documents that they send out. I mean, they have a fixed cost at minimum of postage on a let's take a utility bill, for instance. So they have a fixed cost of postage on there. So the more value we can give those guys for that document that we're sending out, the better service we can provide to them, and certainly help our margins as well.
Right. So you are able to get a price premium in helping them make the shift to color.
In some cases, you're able to maintain the margin where it is, but in some you're able to, again, color in and of itself is not going to get you more revenue, but being able to use that color to add some value, such as trans promo, that sort of thing, certainly
right.
Can help you.
Well, that was my next question. Jim, how about you guys on the color side of shifting the digital documents to from monochrome to color?
Now we were using color for highlighted color for friendly patient billing, if you will. So we were using color. So what we use color for is to be able to do what you just talked about, trans promo, put messages, try to take that data analytics that the client's looking at and saying, how do I divide this up for I'm a credit union and I'm selling them car loans, but they're not doing a checking account with me. So that's what the type of we saw an opportunity for value added with, for instance, a credit union, some one-to-one marketing. But we already were doing color. We were looking to expand our color capability by doing four-color process digital ink.
Mm-hmm. So really both your firms are moving in heavily into the transpromo world. How, Mitch, how much personalized and one-to-one messaging, you know, how granular does that get in terms of the transpromo messaging that you're providing?
Well, it really depends upon how deep the customer wants to go with it. We have the ability to go down to, you know, an individual person based upon any unique data that we can sift through from the data file. It really depends upon what they can send us. We certainly
right.
have the ability to go down as far as they want us to.
Right. And they're seeing good response to those promotional messages.
Well, they're seeing a good response both from a, you know, whatever they're advertising, and in our case, what they're really seeing more of, and Jim spoke about this earlier, is decreasing their call center calls, which is a huge expense for some of these companies.
You know, Mark, the other part of this is, I don't know, for lack of better terms, Mitch, I'll call them ride-alongs. We're doing 1099s or doing 1099s. We're doing W-2s, and you may be a ride-along on there that's helping the client with postage. It might be something for somebody to do tax preparation or whatever. And it could be not be a one-to-one marketing, but maybe a transpromo on there for them. And it's helping them with their postage.
Mm-hmm. We have several of the listeners on this webinar that are not yet involved in high-speed digital printing, you know, whether it's inkjet or toner-based. What general advice could you give to these printers who might be considering making the plunge into that for the first time?
Well, and I may not be the best person to talk with about that. Again, my experience is strictly limited to transactional mailing.
Mm-hmm.
But just at a high level, certainly make sure that you know the vendor, your vendor very, very well. No different than if you're buying any other piece of equipment. There are several different companies out there that are marketing these devices today. Our experience with Rico has been fantastic.
Great. So really choosing the right vendor saves a lot of headaches, it sounds like.
Very, very important.
Yeah. Jim? Same question. Any advice that you could give to printers that may not be into high-speed digital?
So when we went on this journey, and it took about 9 months for our team to decide which print device that we were going to acquire. One of the biggest things that we looked at was the workflow. The workflow was paramount to any digital printing device. So the printing device is, let's call it, a printing device, and you're going to assume that it's going to be able to print, and it's going to put four-color process down, and it's going to do a great job. The workflow around it is really the key to that process working. So we really focused on the workflow process, how we were going to feed it.
Mm-hmm.
And one of the economies of that is bringing multiple versions together to make it economic to have a digital device. A one-to-one comparison with commercial print or business forms is not, it won't withstand that. It needs to be, you need to bring multiple versioning through a high-speed device in order to justify that cost.
Jim, as a follow-up to that, any mistakes that you learned from and maybe what you might have done differently?
We did a lot of due diligence, there was a lot of talk on it. We went through three or four vendors we looked at before we came up with Rico, and Rico was one of the ones that brought the team with, and they were deep and wide on what we needed to have. Probably the only thing I would have changed was maybe we would have had them come in a little earlier and do kind of like a due diligence. We kind of did it a little bit different. We kind of went to them and told them what we wanted, and then we got the equipment, and they came and did it anyway. So I probably would have had to come in a little bit earlier.
Mm-hmm. Mitch, this question's for you, and this is one of the questions that came in again from one of our listeners, and he indicated that since many customers may not actually care about the equipment and the technical side of your business, How do you convey the value of continuous feed printing without focusing on the equipment and the technical aspects? So how do you get across the value without getting all caught up in speeds and feeds and barraging them with equipment specs?
And I really don't talk about equipment when we're out marketing our services. Our customers could care less, what the equipment is. They really care about the final product that we can provide. And then the equipment, helps us provide that final product and also helps us be very efficient internally so that we're able to be competitive from a cost perspective.
Right. Jim, anything to add to that?
I would agree with what Mitch just said. That's our approach as well. We're looking, again, as a consultative selling, going into a client, looking to get them a document that's going to drive their business. And again, the value proposition is how do we help you? How do we help you grow your business? And if it's through this document, how do we do that? So,
mm-hmm. Jim, are you seeing any other trends in customer demand for your products and services at Diamond?
Well, like I said earlier, we're seeing clients that at one time were direct response or direct mail clients that had this didn't see inkjet as part of a document they wanted to put out there for an acquisition mailing. But what we're seeing today is we're seeing tighter time frames to get out to the market for acquisition mailings, and we're seeing a higher adoption rate in our direct mail clients to accept an inkjet document.
How about the equipment and the software is more and more sophisticated than it ever was. Mitch, are you guys having trouble finding a skilled workforce, both on, say, the press operator side, but the IT side, and even really on the sales side, to manage your operations and to go out and sell your services to the clients and prospects?
No, really the only difference that we've seen is color, and we have a graphics department which we've trained in that. We have not had issues in getting people for the operations side or on the IT side. We've really seen no change in our, in what we've been able to recruit in those areas.
Mm-hmm. Jim, would you agree with that? Or?
No, I would agree with Mitch. One of the things that we did here at Diamond was we had continuous operators running monochrome devices, and so it was a natural to go to a web device that was a high-speed digital inkjet. And then we also did was we actually brought in somebody who had a pre-press background of commercial print and forms printing to be able to be our color scientists. Those are a couple of things that complemented our start into the inkjet, high-speed inkjet business. But I would agree with Mitch.
Okay. Well, I still had more questions, but the hour goes by quickly, and we've actually certainly covered quite a bit of ground. But I would like to allow some time just for some questions. I've actually tried to interject several of them, during the course of our discussion, but there were a few that I did not ask you guys. Jim, we got a question. What was the greatest challenge of moving to white paper in when you talked earlier about
I would say color fingerprinting the device to what the bold preprint was. And at the time, we had some challenges with the color gamut, with the original dye ink before Dye Plus, and it was reds. And reds just couldn't get a good 185, PMS 185 red to look like 185 off the digital device. Those reds were kind of our challenges with the client as we transitioned those 206 different preprints. Those were kind of our challenges, how we were going to get to that color. Again, there were some trade-off factors and some things that the client would accept, and today we've overcome that with the new Dye Plus Sync. But I think it was color. basically what the challenges were color.
Okay. Another quick one here. How do you handle special form features like perfs and file holes for your clients? Jim, you want to take that one as well?
Yeah, we buy converted paper already from a paper mill. The paper's already converted, so we stack line holes left and right or pin holes left and right, 18-inch paper, 19-inch paper. We've already got it converted with a 3.5 perf from the top or 3.5 from the bottom. So we've got some stocking items on the floor. So we've decided not to convert in line because converting in line again creates dust and all other kinds of factors. When you're running inkjet, you just don't want to have paper dust on the paper going through the piece of equipment and clogging the head. So we've aligned ourselves with a paper vendor that we get mill direct paper that's already got pre-perf paper and it already has the converted with the line holes left and right.
Okay. Great. Well, it looks like we've just about run out of time, believe it or not. On behalf of Printing Impressions and our sponsor, Rico, I want to thank everyone for attending today's webinar. Be sure to check out our webinar page to get information on all our archived and upcoming webinars. And we'd also be most grateful if you all would just take a moment to fill out the brief feedback survey that will appear on your screen next. Your feedback will help to influence the webinars that we bring you in the future. Finally, I'd especially like to thank Jim Rinella and Mitch Anderson for participating in today's event and for sharing their wisdom. I hope to see all of you at the next Printing Impressions webinar. Thank you so much and have a good day.